Now in a black sky, a sliver of sunlight crests the Earth. Rays of light shoot off the continents and a three-dimensional word orbits the planet. Universal. Words appear below, a division of NBC Universal. Now, electrons revolve around the nuclei of glowing blue atoms. As we shoot backwards, the particles become spheres blanketed by nebulous clouds. They swirl into the radiant vortex of a spiral galaxy. Words appear from the clouds. Relativity media. Titles appear beneath dark water. Universal Pictures presents. Now, we soar over currents sparkling in the sunlight toward a fleet of small boats with brightly colored sails, in association with Relativity Media. Among them is a red boat with a crimson sunburst on its white sail. Its prow reads, Splendid Splinter. A handsome young man heaves the lines.
We'll catch him on the reef, Sam!
The reef is ours, Charlie!
Beneath the water's surface, a title appears, Charlie St. Cloud. As Charlie and Sam look on, a craft with an orange sail tips. A green boat capsizes beside it. Charlie eyes a narrow path between the boats and a buoy.
We're cutting inside.
Inside what?
High guard, Sam! High guard!
Sam leans back over the side.
What are you doing?
The tiller head is far up as
you can. I'm not strong enough.
You're gonna have to be, Sammy.
Here we go,
they accelerate, cutting between the buoy and the capsized boats. Charlie raises an arm.
Yeah!
Yeah! Yeah!
On another boat,
Tess, he's doing it again.
A girl with chestnut hair turns.
Come on, Sam!
God, that buoy's just too good.
She gazes after the Splendid Splinter as it glides past. The boats approach a finish line between two yachts. The lead boat is marked Victory 6.
They're off when I say, Sam, when I say.
Hey, look, we're gonna hit it.
Anna, they're off when I say, Sam. Come on, Sam.
On the Victory 6, a mahogany-skinned youth leans back over the water.
No way he's gonna make it. Right, hang on.
Charlie speeds toward the left yacht.
Charlie, we're gonna hit it. We're gonna hit the boat, Charlie.
No.
They skim past the yacht. Their rival punches the water.
Yeah.
Charlie smiles radiantly. Sam gazes up at him as he backflips into the water. Now, at a sunset reception, they wear gold medals.
St. Cloud boys, let me take your picture.
Hold on a second.
He spits in his hand and smooths Sam's hair.
Gotta look good. This is for the newspaper, right? Look good, right? Sexy pose.
They each affect a hunky stance.
Congratulations, boys.
Thank you.
The photographer steps away. Sam punches his brother's unflinching stomach. Charlie lightly smacks him.
I really thought you had him this time, Tessie.
A well-groomed man gives Tess a warm hug.
Next time.
Charlie grabs hors d'oeuvres from a passing waiter.
Ooh, thank you.
The second place duo approaches.
Charlie, I just wanted to say, you know, great race. Really closed out. Thanks, man.
Yeah, you know they won't let you pull stunts like that in college races, though, St. Cloud. Yale, Stanford, third race this season. Just mark it down on your calendar, St. Cloud, because that's when I'm going to smoke you.
Under their rival's cold smile, Charlie grins, and Sam smirks uneasily.
Come on, Sam. Don't look at me like that.
Is there some things you can't buy, Connors?
He shows his medal.
Oh.
Now, a row of cannons fires beside a sign, Bailey Yacht Club. From a deck, the two brothers watch a fleet of sloops heading out to sea.
Where do you think they're going, Charlie?
Everywhere, Sammy. They're going everywhere.
He rests his arm on Sam's shoulder as they gaze out at the water.
Don't worry, that's going to be us one day.
Sam nods. Charlie pulls him into a hug and tousles his hair.
You and me, bud. Setting sail at sunset cannons.
Now in a car's passenger seat, a blonde uses a vanity mirror to apply lipstick.
It's not like it would be the end of the world. I'm just saying, I could work for a year, fill the coffers, and then go to Stanford. You said yourself it was too expensive even with the aid, Mom.
I didn't say it was too expensive. I said it was expensive.
Mom, I don't want you having to work double shifts at the hospital all the time.
You got in fall, so you go in fall. You can't put life on hold, Charlie. It doesn't wait for you.
In the back seat, Sam looks back and forth between his mother and brother.
I want to be there when he spanks Yale.
I do too.
I want to be there when he spanks Yale.
Spank him.
Their mother gazes wistfully out her window. Now the car rolls to a stop.
Everybody's dressed so fancy.
They watch parents enter a school.
You look beautiful, Mom.
She tugs at her cardigan.
Gorgeous.
Later.
Charles Percival St. Cloud, captain of the sailing team, winner of the Keating Scholar After Award.
Two teens in caps and gowns stand. Tess bites her lip as she applauds. At the podium.
Congratulations. Expecting big things from you, young man.
Expecting big things from myself, sir.
Tess's sailing partner elbows her. Now, in a lobby, Charlie adjusts Sam's tie.
Straighten up, Charlie.
You shoot so lame.
Sammy!
Charlie's two friends rush over. The leaner one picks Sam up.
Put me down, Sullivan.
Sammy's on a rampage.
Don't let me hurt you, Green.
As the boy spars with the heavier teen, Charlie puts an arm around Sullivan.
Made it. All right.
Green throws Sam over his shoulder and spins.
Hey, Kager at the point tonight. Your attendance is required. Okay, it's our last hurrah.
We're going to have hurrahs all summer long.
We ship out next week for boot camp. Everything got accelerated.
Next week?
Green quickly puts Sam down.
I'll be there.
Sam lunges at Green, who flinches.
Don't mess with me, Green.
Now, a lighthouse stands in the golden glow of a low sun. Water ripples in a marina. In town, a few pedestrians laze along a sidewalk. Charlie waits on the porch of a modest house with a baseball mitt. As Sam comes outside with his own mitt, his brother eyes his watch.
You're late.
Oh, yeah, I couldn't find my glove.
You're late, Sam. Do you want to make majors next season?
Yeah, I'm going to try.
Yeah? You're going to try?
Yes, definitely, yes.
I don't want to waste my time here with
you. Yes, yes.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay. Then I'll make a deal with you. I'll practice with you for 1 hour. Every day, right after I get off work up until I leave for Stanford.
The younger brother pounds his glove.
I'll meet you at Sunset Cannons. Every day. But if you keep me waiting like this, just one time, the whole deal's off.
No, I won't. I won't.
You better not.
Nah. I swear, no, I won't.
Okay. Then let's do this.
Sam runs down the driveway and up the street. Charlie steps out after him.
Stop.
He beckons the boy. Sam takes a step closer and starts to throw.
Stop.
What?
Fundamentals, get over here.
The younger brother lumbers over. Charlie takes the ball.
Put your hand out, palms up. See these wide seams?
Mm-hmm.
That's the correct way to hold a baseball.
Didn't know I was going to get to go to baseball camp this summer.
It's because rich kids go to camp, Sammy. Do you have a trust fund you're not telling me about?
Not really. No.
No, you don't. But you know what you do have.
Good looks?
No, you got me.
He smacks Sam.
Get back over there. Hustle.
As the boy obeys, their mother comes out in scrubs.
Hey, I pulled an extra shift. You are on Sam duty.
Mom, I have plans.
Make sure he gets in the bed at a decent hour.
Mom.
I'll bring you donuts for breakfast.
Oh, yeah, make mine chocolate.
Okay.
She runs after a bus.
Hey, wait!
Nighttime. Sam takes notes as he watches a baseball game on TV.
Hey, Sam!
In the kitchen, Charlie cooks dinner.
Hey, buddy, your dinner's ready, okay? Sam, I'm putting your dinner in the oven, all right?
Okay!
The boy furiously scribbles notes. Now, outside, Charlie climbs out a window and pauses on a ledge. He hops down to the splendid splinter, which sits with its sails lowered, then jumps down to the shadowy driveway. Creeping alongside the house, he makes his way to the family car. He quietly opens the driver's side door and gets behind the wheel. As he starts the engine, the headlights reveal Sam standing in his path.
Stop!
Jeez! What the...
He wears a Red Sox jacket, his mitt, and a giant foam finger.
What are you doing?
What are you doing? You're on Sam duty.
No one babysat me when I was 11, Sam.
Look, it's a seventh inning stretch. Can you please just get me to Tommy's by the bottom of the eighth?
No, it's not exactly on the way, Sam.
The headlights cut out.
Sweet ride.
Charlie glares, then begrudgingly beckons his younger brother. Sam gets into the car beside him.
You're going out like that?
Crucial game.
Nerd.
Follow me.
He buckles himself in. Charlie starts the car, then lightly backhands him.
Dick.
They pull out into the street. Later, the car barrels down a street.
Hey, keep an eye out for cops.
Sam stares down glumly.
Hey, man, be on the lookout for cops.
Whatever.
Sammy! Cheer up!
Charlie whacks him playfully.
Come on, Sammy. Sammy, baby.
Just can't wait, can you?
Sully and Greenleaf for basic training in a week.
No, Charlie, I mean to get out of here.
Come on. I'm gonna see you all the time.
Dad said.
Yeah, but I'm not Dad. I'm not gonna ditch you, Sam. I'm not gonna ditch you. Cheer up, man. Not an option. You got 1 second to cheer up.
He smacks Sam again.
Lucky that wasn't my throwing arm.
Or what?
To kick your ass.
Charlie arches his brow. Sam stifles a smile. The brothers swat each other.
Hey, what are you doing?
Ow, my knuckles.
Shut your window, man. Feel a draft. Dude, watch it. Huh? Calm down. I'm driving. Sam, I'm driving.
Sam settles irritably into his seat. Charlie gets in one last punch. The car slows to a stop as a steady stream of vehicles passes in the opposing lane.
Come on.
He impatiently turns the wheels to make a turn. An SUV rear-ends him, shoving the car sideways into the oncoming lane. Headlights speed closer through Sam's window.
Charlie?
A big rig flips the station wagon. Cut to black. Now, shiny sparks glimmer in the darkness. As our view passes over them, they reveal themselves to be thousands of glass shards scattered on the inky asphalt. The station wagon lies on its crushed roof, and an ambulance arrives down the street. Nearby, Sam sits between his brother's legs. They hold hands.
Mom's gonna kill us!
Don't worry, I'll take the blame.
God, I hurt so much!
A paramedic's dark-clad legs stride toward the car.
What's that?
He shines a flashlight.
They're looking for us.
Who?
I don't know.
Whatever happens, please just don't leave me, okay? Charlie!
I won't.
Charlie! Please just don't leave me!
I won't!
Now, the paramedic shocks Charlie with defibrillator paddles.
Give it up. Kid's flatlined. It's a lost cause.
Such a thing as a lost cause. Quiet.
A monitor shows a flatline. A heartbeat appears and Charlie opens his eyes. The paramedic kisses a silver medallion.
Thank you, Jude.
Hey. Welcome back.
Where was I?
It's okay.
Where was I?
You just gotta relax here.
Where's Sam?
Everything's okay, but you gotta stay still.
Where's Sam?
You gotta stay still. Okay? Everything's okay.
Sam's motionless arm sticks out from beneath a sheet on another gurney.
Sam?
You gotta rest. You gotta...
Charlie struggles to sit up, but the paramedic holds him down.
Sam! Sam! No!
The medic readies a syringe.
Stop! No! That's my brother! Sam! I can't leave him! Oh, my gosh! I'm sorry, Sam!
Back at the scene of the accident, investigators pace around the wrecked station wagon. A flashlight sweeps over Sam's baseball cap.
Fatality accident, one conscious, one DOA.
Daytime at Sam's funeral.
Jesus Christ. God, whose mercies cannot be numbered. Accept our prayers on behalf of the soul of thy servant departed, and grant him an entrance into the land of light and joy.
Charlie cradles Sam's baseball glove against his chest as a white coffin lowers into an open grave.
Who hast been pleased to take unto thyself the soul of this thy servant.
His face swollen and eyes puffy, he stares off numbly.
To walk as yet by faith in glory.
He looks up and catches a glimpse of a red shape behind a headstone.
Amen.
Charlie? If you want to drop the glove in now.
Charlie nervously shifts his gaze. His pallid mother blinks down at the casket. Charlie backs away.
You can't.
As he shuffles off, his mother grabs his arm.
Charlie, I'm sorry.
Glancing at Sam's grave over his shoulder, he pulls away, then breaks into a run. He abandons the funeral and sprints into the forest. More headstones stand among the trees. Charlie races past them, still cradling his brother's baseball glove. Later, he jogs down a trail cut between older headstones. As the setting sun flares through the trees around him, he staggers down a rocky slope. He imagines the crimson big rig ramming into the passenger side of the station wagon. Charlie remembers the wagon tumbling down the road. He trips and falls face down, dropping the mitt. A baseball rolls out from it. He starts to push himself up, then lowers his head toward the ground. The grieving brother crawls onto his hands and knees, then weakly sits up. His chest heaves as he grimaces tearfully and hangs his head. The baseball rolls back out of the forest toward the mitt. Charlie glances at it, then lifts his gaze. His twisted features relax. Sam stands before him in his Red Sox jacket. Charlie gawks at his brother, then quizzically knits his brow. Sam gives an irritable shrug.
You're late. I thought we had a deal.
His stunned older brother continues to stare at him.
We do. We do have a deal.
Sam blinks, his lips pressed into a slight pout. Charlie earnestly lifts his dark brows.
Meet here. Every day at Sunset Cannons.
Promise?
I promise. I promise.
Charlie's gaping mouth curls into a faint smile. His brother gives a sharp nod. The ruddy leather mitt and white baseball lie on the mossy ground between them. Our view rises into the trees above the glade, then soars into the sky. The forest stretches across rolling hills to the bay. At the distant horizon, the sun hovers between streaks of grayish-orange clouds. The water catches their reflection in a flame-colored haze, fade to black. Words appear 5 years later. Now, dull gray clouds hang over the same view of the forest, the bay, and the sea. We glide toward the coastline and dive through the trees to the grassy cemetery. A white headstone reads, Samuel St. Cloud, taken too soon, alive in our hearts forever. An autumn leaf blows past. Now, boats float in the marina. The sleepy town lies still around it. Dock lights turn off and a rundown boat shed stands vacant. The neglected Splendid Splinter lies inside, a dusty sail thrown carelessly across its faded stern.
Green flag wind conditions this afternoon, so today is the day to get out on the...
Now, Charlie lies awake. He turns off his clock radio. Later, he checks a Quincy Harbor sunset chart and exits a modest cabin. A pack shed stands beside it, and a nearby sign reads, Caretaker's Residence. A Gator utility vehicle sits parked out front. Charlie gathers some supplies and metal trash can lids. Later, he drives the Gator through the sunny cemetery. Now, he races out among the headstones and chases a gaggle of white geese, banging two trash can lids together like cymbals. Now, he raises an American flag up a pole. Later, he chases the geese again. They flap their wings and scramble away. Charlie repaints a sign reading, No rubbing on headstones. Now, the Gator drives by behind a fence which bears a sign reading, Please keep off the grass. Charlie opens the cemetery's tall wrought iron gates, then climbs back into the utility vehicle. He drives up to a shaggy-haired young man laying down a new patch of grass turf. Nearby, a goose perches comfortably on a flat-topped headstone, while more of the gaggle grazes on the lawn. Charlie strolls up to the shaggy young man.
You all right, boss man? Right, Sam geese are back, and they've done nasty things to my grass again. And they've crapped over every headstone in the whole place. That one's a leader, him.
A goose rears up and flaps.
Well, do the best you can with the grass.
Yeah, well, the best I can do is to shoot the buggers, Charlie.
You want to run around Seaside with a rifle, Alistair?
What about high-power crossbow?
Remember Mr. Casamano? Put him in over Peachtree Hill about a month ago?
Yeah, that guy.
Yeah, he's coming up.
Why?
Because the police suspect his wife may be responsible for his untimely demise.
You're a joke, yeah. I shouldn't laugh, it's not funny. Oh, speaking of untimely demise, it's me and Cindy's anniversary tomorrow night. We're going to Maddie's. Do you want to come?
Yeah, I'll try.
Will you actually try though? Because last time you said you tried, you didn't really try, did you, Charlie? You just ended up staying here. And this time Cindy has arranged a little friend to meet you.
Are you even listening?
No, of course not.
You got that glitch in the sprinkler system fixed, didn't you?
That'd be a no. But it's not my fault this time. Don't look at me like that. It's actually not my fault. I called the sprinkler guy and he said he couldn't come till next week. So I was like, all right, cool, come next week. But more important, all right, listen to me about this. Cindy's got this mate overstaying and she is a waitress at the Red Dog Inn. Charlie, the Red Dog Inn. You know about the Red Dog Inn, don't you?
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Tess storms up with an armload of uprooted dead flowers.
Hey, who's got the green thumb?
What?
She flings them down.
The garden around my father's grave needs to be completely replanted.
And
maybe you could do it.
Any flower preferences?
Yeah, living. I prefer living flowers.
She gives Charlie a once-over.
Good. I'll get right on that.
Yeah, that'll be great. Getting flowers. Sorry. Thank you.
Bye.
She awkwardly hikes off. Charlie gazes after her.
Anyway, so she's a little bit naughty, a little bit saucy, a little bit promiscuous. The waitress, Charlie, please keep up, mate. Red Dog Inn.
Later, Charlie speeds along in the gator, then skids to a stop to scare off some of the geese. He turns the utility vehicle off and glances out among the headstones.
Hey! Hey!
A marine in dress uniform crouches at one of them. Charlie strides toward him.
Hey, buddy. Hey, man, can you read signs? No rubbing.
The Marine picks at something on the stone, then stands and grins. It's Sully.
If I was going to rub one out, I wouldn't do it in a graveyard, St. Cloud.
People are always tracing these headstones. Lieutenant Sullivan.
Charlie ambles closer and salutes.
Sir.
At ease. You haven't changed, St. Cloud. How's your mom?
She moved to Portland.
Hey, were you here when they brought Green in?
He nods.
Drove over a landmine. He was a real mess.
Not by the time I saw him. Everybody looks great after.
Well, I'm glad to hear there are some perks. Hey, what's with this stuff all over the stone?
It's the geese, man. Something corrosive in their shit. Don't worry. I'm on it.
Thanks.
Sully picks at bird poop on top of the stone, then studies it on the finger of his white glove.
I wish I was there with you guys.
I'm glad you weren't, Charlie. I'm glad you weren't.
Elsewhere, Alistair carries a crossbow to a tree trunk stuck with two arrows. Plopping the weapon on the ground, he quizzically eyes Charlie a short distance away. The caretaker stands alone among the headstones, gesturing conversationally and nodding as if talking to someone. Alistair keeps his gaze locked on his boss as he uses a pair of pliers to tug a crossbow bolt out of the tree. Charlie nods, seemingly to no one.
You don't have to go right away.
Sully stifles a smile and shifts his eyes.
Gotta face it sometime. Hey, I'll say hi to Sammy for you.
He beams and strolls off toward the forest. Charlie watches tearfully.
He's not there.
Sully steps out of view behind the headstone, which reads, Timothy Patrick Sullivan, Lieutenant, U.S. Marine Corps. Now, Charlie strolls into a hobby and toy shop. Three teen girls stand behind the counter.
I don't get it. He's totally cute.
Puppies are cute. He's weird.
He's misunderstood.
He works in a graveyard.
Oh, wounded.
Charlie brings a remote control plane to the counter. One girl rings it up while her friend flirts.
Hey.
Hi.
You're funny.
9750.
Charlie hands over some cash.
So, maybe you want to take me out on your boat sometime, Charlie?
Yeah. Yeah, sure.
I love sailing.
Cool.
The girls eye him expectantly.
Maybe I can take you out sometime, too.
Yeah. Enjoy your toy plane, Charlie.
It's not for me. It's for the geese.
He heads out with the plane.
So what do you wear on a sailing date?
I wouldn't put too much thought into it, seeing as he hasn't been sailing in 5 years.
Now, Charlie closes and locks the cemetery gates. He gives them a jiggle, and they hold tight. Later, he enters his cabin and takes off his uniform work shirt. Wearing a long-sleeved tee, he tosses down his keys and slides open a drawer. He pulls out his mitt and throws a baseball into it. Heading back out, he pauses at the door to check the Quincy Harbor sunset chart, then gives it a light tap and exits. A window shows him moving the toy plane aside to climb onto the gator. Now, the setting sun flares brightly through the forest. Charlie hikes past a headstone showing a weeping angel. He carries a bulky trash bag slung over his shoulder while cradling his baseball glove to his chest. Smiling, he continues through the sunny forest and enters the glade. He slings down the trash bag, winds up, and pitches the baseball high into the air. It smacks down into Sam's mitt.
So what's new in Quincy?
Not much.
Charlie shows the plane.
Hey, you got it! Hi, Grant, let's go hit the lake.
No, not until after practice. Back up, get out of here.
Please, can we just go now?
What's our deal, Sam?
The big brother pounds his fist into his own mitt.
We practice every day at Sunset Cannons. Come rain or shine, come hell or high water.
Yeah, that's the deal. Let's go. Grounders.
Later, the ball bounces along the ground and Sam catches it. He throws it back. Charlie sends him more grounders.
Nice.
What's wrong?
Nothing. Remember two hands. Don't sit back like that. Charge.
Something bad.
I didn't want to tell you. Sox lost a home and home to the Yankees.
Sam's jaw drops. Charlie throws the ball toward him, but he lets it bounce past.
I'm kidding, dork.
Sam chuckles and shakes his head. Charlie remains solemn.
I saw Sully today.
The younger brother swallows, his gaze drifting around the forest. Later, at an inlet.
Did he say anything? About leaving?
Oh, you know, Sully. I think he was good with it. I think you really miss Green.
The toy plane taxis on the water.
I think I'd miss you. A little bit, maybe.
But you don't have to. Because we get this thing wired.
Sam's smile falters and he grows thoughtful. His older brother glances skyward.
All right, you ready? Here they come. About to get bloody.
The remote control plane lifts off the water and speeds into the sky. It circles, then flies into the flock of geese, scattering them. Their droppings rain down. Charlie and Sam dive into the lake. The plane crashes down as well. It bobs on the water as the sunny twilight gives way to evening. Charlie resurfaces by himself and flips his hair out of his face. His merry grin fades as he surveys the darkened inlet. Finding himself alone, he idly runs his arms through the water. Later, he climbs back onto shore, his long-sleeved tee molding itself to his lithe, muscular torso. The grieving brother heaves a sigh and stares out at the inlet. Now, a light shines outside the boat shed, and a window glows from within. Inside, Charlie sketches a sloop in red ink at a drafting table. He marks a starburst on the sail. Now, on another day, the glass door of a shop reflects an image of the street. Opening the door with his back, Charlie heads outside and bumps into a passerby.
Oh, geez. You all right? I'm sorry.
The pale man grabs Charlie's shoulder.
Oh, boy. Charlie St. Cloud.
Yeah.
I brought you back from the dead. That ring a bell?
You're the paramedic.
I'm the paramedic. Florio Ferente. It's so good to see you. Hey, you want to grab a cup of coffee? Catch up?
Oh, I can't, man. I got to go back to work. I'm sorry.
You can't have a cup of coffee?
Now, Charlie and Ferenti sit in a booth at a coffee shop.
So, what have you been up to the past 5 years? You love? You marry?
No. Hasn't happened yet.
No?
Charlie notes a hospital bracelet on the wrist of his frail-looking companion.
You're sick. Yeah, I got the big C.
Sorry?
Nah, don't be. I have no regrets. I lived a full life.
Is that really a consolation?
It's the only one there is, Charlie. Plus, I got to witness a miracle. How many people could say that to St. Peter when they reached the pearly gates? Huh? You're a complete flatline. Nothing. And then...
He lifts his palms skyward and opens them toward Charlie. The young man swallows.
You must think about why.
Why what?
Why you? Why did you get a second chance? God just doesn't show off. There's got to be a reason. God gave you a second chance.
Well, if there is one, I haven't figured it out yet.
Yeah, well, I don't think it's going to come to you working in a graveyard. You're a young man. You should be out in the world living your life. Don't squander this gift you've been given.
Under Ferenti's stare, Charlie glances away, then shifts in his seat. Now he strides out of the restaurant, his eyes cast downward. As he steps into the street, a fisherman in waterproof bib pants passes with a rope slung over his shoulder. Heading toward the harbor, Charlie lifts his gaze and stops. He stares mesmerized out at the water. A beautiful state-of-the-art sloop glides across the harbor. Charlie looks away, sucking in a breath, then returns his gaze to the sailboat as he sets his bag in the back of his gaiter. He glances at his watch. At the dock, a television reporter films a news segment.
One of Quincy's own, she will seek to become the youngest skipper ever to compete in the grueling...
Charlie passes the news crew and strides down the pier with his eyes fixed on the boat. Now, the vessel sits anchored with its foresail folded down and tied. The number 11 adorns the side of its sleek hull. Charlie squints at Tess as she commands a small crew.
So, what do you tie the main down? And I think the cockpit.
Later.
She was fully at whole speed going downwind, handled super light. Now, whether I win this race or not, let's hope that I do, right, King? I mean, coach. Whether I win it or not, it will not be because I didn't have a great boat. Thank you so much, guys.
That girl's gonna sail around the world?
Yeah.
In the Glade, Charlie flips through a boating magazine to an article with photos of Tess.
Is that the girl? She's hot.
She's all right.
All right. Is there a swimsuit shot anywhere in there?
What are you going to do with a swimsuit shot?
Everything.
Sam snatches the magazine and runs off.
Come on.
You wanna?
Give me the magazine. Sam, you're going to wreck it.
I'm totally going to wreck it. I'm going to wreck it repeatedly, Charlie.
He reads the article.
Tess Carroll.
As Charlie grabs the magazine back, it rips.
Well done, Charlie. I'm sure. You only left him with the cover page.
Charlie holds the open magazine against his leg and smooths its wrinkled pages. Nighttime. At the cemetery, a light above the boat shed's open barn door illuminates the bow of Charlie's neglected sailboat inside. In his work area, he sketches at a drafting table. The boating magazine rests above his paper, open to pictures and diagrams of Tess's canting keel. He leans back in his chair and glances around, fidgeting absent-mindedly with his pencil. Later, he rests his head on his hand, his brow furrowed. Lifting his gaze, he strokes his chin thoughtfully and stares at a calendar on the wall. Its monthly picture shows a whale's tail fin curved upward. Now, at the docks, our view glides from the blue and red hull of Tess's sloop to Charlie sketching the sailboat on a railing. Alistair approaches from behind. He taps Charlie's right shoulder, then leans over the left.
Charlie!
Charlie flinches, and Alistair shakes him.
I cannot believe it. Hello!
Hi.
It's our anniversary.
Yeah.
No, not our anniversary, because we're not going out, but... Miss Indies.
I wouldn't miss your anniversary, man.
I know you wouldn't, and it means a lot. What's that?
Nothing.
You all right?
Yeah.
What are you doing? Doing a bit of drawing. Very nice. Come on in. Come inside. It's going to be well fun, mate.
Later in the crowded tavern, Charlie gazes down at a beer bottle in his hands while patrons around him dance enthusiastically. As Alistair sings karaoke on stage, a blonde stops in front of Charlie.
Hey, Cindy.
They hug.
Happy anniversary.
Thanks.
She's really talented.
Oh, I know. Come meet Rachel.
Right now?
Yeah.
She leads him to a pretty brunette at the bar.
Rachel, this is Charlie, the one I told you about.
Hi. Hey.
And he said you wouldn't show. Only because we never see you out at night, Charlie.
Ever since the werewolf fight, I tend to only come out during full moons.
Rachel stares at him.
The moon is in full.
Then I guess it's your lucky night.
He grins at Cindy. She glances at Rachel, then gives him a pained smile. On stage, Alistair yells into his microphone. The patrons raise their glasses. Alistair comes down and kisses his girlfriend passionately. Charlie moves aside as his friend lifts Cindy onto the bar, their lips still glued together. Rachel smiles at Charlie, who gives an awkward look. Elsewhere in the tavern, Tink joins Tess at a table.
Hey.
How's the weather looking, Coach?
He shows a weather map.
Look, low pressure system coming down from Alaska. See how tight those ice cores are on the back of the depression? Not good.
That means more wind.
Too much wind. This test run can wait.
The electronics aren't even installed yet.
My boat gets shipped back east in a week. I need to get out on the water. Obviously, I'll stay clear of the storm.
Meanwhile, Connors steps in front of Charlie.
Hey, didn't you used to be Charlie St. Cloud?
Charlie! Man, been a long time, huh? Come on, get your boats. Now, let's go.
From the dining area, Tess watches Charlie through a window.
Hey. Why are you so interested in that loon?
I'm not. I ran into him for the first time since high school the other day. And he flummoxed me.
Listen, everybody in town knows the St. Cloud kid.
He circles his finger by his temple.
Totally certifiable.
Meanwhile,
when we were growing up, Charlie was unbeatable on the water. He got himself a sailing scholarship and everything. Glory days. Huh, Charlie?
Clenching his jaw, Charlie looks away. His frown fades as he sees Tess enter the bar area. She meets his gaze.
Hey.
Holding out a shot, Connors nudges him.
Hey.
Charlie looks over.
No, it's okay, man. I'm good. Thank you.
Come on, St. Cloud. Don't be a woman. Have another. It's not like there's a big demand for you as a designated driver. So take the drink that...
Charlie grabs him by the lapels and shoves him to the bar. Alistair restrains his friend.
Oh, fine. You want a piece of me, you pathetic townie creep?
Connors grins at Charlie.
Your boy just saved you from a beating.
No, you're probably right. I'm sorry, man. How is everything, man? How's Goldman Sachs? Heard the layoffs have been pretty brutal.
Just a better opportunity to weed out the weak.
Yeah, but you're good, right? Still a full dental and everything?
Yeah.
Charlie punches him in the face, then pushes past the gaping crowd and heads out of the tavern. At a loss for words, Alistair watches him go. Outside, Charlie heads onto the dock with his bag. He glances over his shoulder at some people leaving the tavern, then pauses and examines his right hand. As he pulls his jacket tight around himself, his gaze freezes, and he stares wistfully out at the water. A lamp at the dock's railing illuminates his lonesome figure. Now Charlie cautiously grabs a suspended safety wire running along the side of Tess's sloop. He slides his hand across it as he walks the length of the deck. The vessel's lowered sails rest loosely around the boom, their folds draped over the cabin's roof. Charlie sweeps his gaze up a taut vertical line, then gives it a light karate chop. Grabbing onto it, he jumps up onto the edge of the deck. He leans back and tugs on the line. He remembers holding a line on his own boat as he pumps his fist.
Hey!
Charlie falls onto the dock as he sees Tess in the cockpit.
What are you doing?
I was just looking at your boat.
He starts to leave.
Sorry if I scared you.
You don't scare me.
She smirks at him as she pulls the crank off a winch.
I'm harmless, I promise. I'm not.
Really? Doesn't seem so harmless up at Maddie's.
Yeah, that. I can explain that.
Yeah?
Yeah. Connors is a dick.
Yeah. Always has been.
Yeah.
Tess climbs up onto her deck and looks down at Charlie.
You don't remember me, do you?
Yeah, I do.
You do?
I do. I already replanted all the flowers by your father's grave.
High school. Took an AP class together.
And you don't remember.
Of course I remember you. You sat up at the front of the class. Had your hand up the entire semester.
Busted.
Yeah.
You won the Commodore's Cup.
Yeah.
You got a big sailing scholarship to Stanford, right?
I deferred. Wow.
He averts his gaze and stares off. Shifting her eyes, Tess sucks in a breath, then glances at her shoes.
Anyways, should get going, I guess.
Yeah, it's good catching up.
Yeah.
Charlie watches as she jumps into the sunken cockpit and grabs the lip of the cabin's roof. She shoots him a look, then swings into the boat. Charlie glances away, then buries his face in his hands. Lifting his gaze again, he swallows hard.
Flukes!
Tess peers out from the cabin.
Flukes?
Flukes, like a whale tail.
Uh-huh.
Can I show you something?
Yeah.
As she emerges, Charlie takes his drawing pad out of his bag. Tess looks down on him from her deck.
See, there's a...
He shows her his keel sketch.
There's newer technology. You can fabricate organic lines.
This would completely change your boat. There's no drag. There's virtually no cavitation.
Yeah, I know. I wanted to do something similar. But everyone told me structural stability was more important.
That doesn't apply here.
Why?
Because this eliminates direct stress on the keel. It's basic. Are you serious? Sorry.
He averts his gaze. Crouching beside him, Tess takes the pad. She flips to his drawing of her sloop.
Anyways.
Is that my boat?
Yeah.
Tess eyes him, her face inches from his.
You drew my boat.
Yeah. Good luck with the race, and,
He steps away.
Be careful out there.
Thank you.
She looks off, then glances at Charlie as he leaves. Morning. Pale sunlight glows on the horizon, and shadows hang over the boats at the marina. An aerial view shows sunbeams leaking through evergreens behind the Quincy Lighthouse. From the gallery, Charlie stares out at the inlet, where Tess's sloop glides toward the open sea. Our view sweeps across the rippling water, past the boat, which tilts slightly from its full, billowing sails. A name on its stern reads, Carencia. Tess uses her radio.
How's my girl?
Bored?
Yeah, that's what I like to hear. Where are you?
I was passing Whidbey Island, heading into Puget Sound.
Okay, good girl. Keep going southeast. That storm's rolling in, looking really hairy.
Aye, aye, Captain.
Over.
She sets down the mic, then eyes her sails.
All right. Can't make it through a little low-pressure system, then you have no right being in that race.
Come on!
She pushes the tiller, then pulls on a rope, tightening it around a spool.
Come on! Come on! This is what you're made for!
The boom swings to starboard, tipping the boat at an extreme angle. As the mainsail flops loosely, Tess uses both hands to wind the cranks on a winch like bicycle pedals. The sails catch the wind, and her sloop glides toward a cloudy horizon. Now in the glade, Charlie traces the stitches on a baseball.
The first leg is an all-out 8,000-mile sprint to Cape Town. Boom shakalaka. I would kill that. You would never catch me.
He tosses the ball to Sam.
Slider?
No, I don't feel like retrieving balls today.
Sam throws back to Charlie.
See, rounding Cape Horn is where it gets tricky. The southern seas are tough for even the most experienced sailors because of
the blood-sucking sea monkeys.
Charlie fakes a hard throw.
Icebergs.
Of course, the...
Sam mocks him.
Icebergs. You could never do this race.
Why? Why can't I do the race?
A solo race? You couldn't take being alone for 6 months? No way.
I could do it.
Oh, what? What if it wasn't for me, you could go?
No, Sam, I didn't say that. I just said I could. I won't. Of course, but I could.
Hey, don't let me stop you.
He throws the ball fast and hard to Charlie.
Getting angry? Trying to bring the heat, Sam?
The heat? That's not heat. You want heat?
Bring the heat, Sammy.
Let's go.
So scared. Come on, Sam. Falling asleep here.
He holds his glove chest high. As Sam winds up, Charlie closes his eyes. Sam pitches the ball into Charlie's crotch.
Oh!
Charlie drops to his knees, then falls on his back.
You okay?
Oh.
Oh.
Strike.
Did you see that? Lightning!
As rain pours down on the brothers, a smile spreads across Charlie's face. Now he bangs two trash can lids together like cymbals. He pulls their handles off, then rides one like a surfboard down a stream of muddy water flooding the glade. With a running start, Sam jumps on his own lid, knees first, but quickly slips off. Now as he lies on the ground, Charlie leaps over him and bodyboards. Later, Sam sits on his lid, making devil horns with his fingers, while his brother drags him by the legs and flings him away. Charlie sleds on one knee and one foot. The brothers race on their bellies. As Charlie surfs again, Sam charges at him. They collide and fall. Charlie tries to use a log like a ramp. He repeatedly glides up it, then falls off. Finally, he manages to stick the landing. Charlie does a headstand as he rides on his lid. Later, he skims a lid toward his brother. Sam tries to jump on it, but falls. Now, the brothers take a running start. Sam dives onto his lid, but goes nowhere. In the cemetery, darkness falls over the statue of a young girl. Then the rain ceases as day breaks. Some geese peck at the grass, while Charlie peeks out at them from behind a headstone.
Hey, guys. How long are we going to do this for? This isn't a game.
He rushes at them, banging his trash can lids together.
Out of here!
Tess wakes up on her father's grave.
What the hell are you doing?
Charlie spots her.
Hi.
Hi.
Colorful flowers line the hedge around the grave.
I'm sorry about the noise. I apologize. I just got carried away.
He heads off.
Hey,
She stands and winces.
You did a lovely job with flowers.
He jogs back to her.
No, I'm fine. I just hit some rough weather last night.
Have you had that looked at?
What?
He indicates a wound on her head.
No, it's fine. I just need some sleep. Fine.
I could clean it up for you and see if it needs a stitch. It's kind of gross. I'm right down the hill.
Later, Charlie applies antiseptic to her wound.
It'll sting now.
Is it fatal?
Definitely.
He lowers her hair back over the cut.
All done. You don't need stitches.
Not a stitch?
No.
Charlie goes into the kitchen. Tess drums on the edge of her chair, then stands and crosses to a window. She notices a framed photo of Charlie and Sam on the splendid splinter and picks it up.
Drunk driver, wasn't it?
I'm sorry? What?
Your brother. Is that why you gave up sailing? Stanford? Everything?
Charlie blinks, his gaze stricken.
Oh, Chris, that was tactless. I'm sorry, I must be concussed or something.
No. Maybe we could talk. Another time?
Yeah. Yeah, I like that. I need to talk with you sometime, Charlie. Maybe when I get back. 6 months.
She leaves the cabin with a coy smirk. Turning, Charlie plants his hands on the kitchen doorframe and leans far back. He straightens, checks his watch, and checks the sunset chart. Pounding it with his fist, he pulls a curtain aside and watches Tess walk away through a warped glass window.
I can do this.
He rushes from the cabin to a waterside ridge. Jumping down to the gravel shore, he races after Tess. He halts in his tracks, gazing helplessly after the departing girl.
Hey! Hey!
She slows as he runs to catch up to her.
I know how to cook.
Yeah?
I mean, would you please have dinner with me tonight? At my place?
Charlie, in a few days, I'm going to get my boat and sail away for six months. So, not really much of a prospect, am I?
Walking away, Tess bites her lip.
Are you a good cook?
Excellent. Beer or wine?
She turns back with a warm smirk.
Surprise me.
Okay. All right, I will.
Now, in the glade.
Well, you have to make her pizza.
Okay.
What? Peach is delicious.
Not arguing.
I think peach is delicious.
Good.
Sam throws to his brother. Charlie catches the ball, tosses it from his mitt to his hand, then returns it.
Remember me telling you that I kissed Jenny York?
Yeah.
Well, I lied.
The young boy lowers his doleful gaze.
Hey. Believe me. You're not missing much.
Sam gives a nod and readies himself for a catch. Charlie pounds the ball into his glove, then throws it to him.
Is she a Sox fan?
Absolute fanatic.
Really?
At dinner.
I hate baseball.
You're insane.
You don't agree?
Well.
Oh, God, it's so boring.
Agree to disagree.
Come on. They stand around for 9 innings, and they don't do
golf.
Golf?
Yeah, or shopping.
Football. That's my sport.
Oh, come on.
Oh, please.
No way.
Yes.
You didn't strike me as one of those chicks who likes necklace roid heads.
Well, I do. Come on, hairier the better.
Yeah. More wine?
Yes, please.
Charlie goes into the kitchen. Clad in a white halter dress, Tess crosses to a bulletin board covered in sketches of boat designs. She turns abruptly as Charlie returns with a glass of white wine for her. She takes it and points.
Are you moving?
Stacked boxes fill a corner of the room.
No, that's all Sam's stuff.
Oh. I couldn't get rid of my dad's stuff either.
Tess lowers her gaze. Pointing, Charlie crosses to a high box.
This one over here contains thousands of vintage Red Sox baseball cards.
Really?
Yeah.
Why the obsession with the team from Boston?
According to Sammy, our dad played for the Red Sox.
Did he?
No. He tried out for the AAA team in Pawtucket. That was the last we saw of him.
His gaze distant, the young man sips his wine. Tess points over her shoulder where Charlie's sketch of her sloop hangs on the wall.
Can I have that sketch someday?
He looks from the drawing to his date. She leans back coyly against his drafting table and sips her wine. He steps in close, reaches past her shoulder, and takes the sketch down. With a smoldering look, he offers it to her.
It's yours now?
She takes it with a coquettish smirk.
Thanks.
As he leans in closer, she brushes past him.
So I haven't shown you my roots.
You're limping.
Yeah, told you. Got tossed around pretty good in my lasso.
She faces a map.
So I'm starting in Boston. And then I'm gonna make my way south towards Brazil.
Charlie steps in behind her.
And then I'm gonna go.
He plants a tender kiss on her shoulder.
Through the.
He turns her to face him, and his lips hungrily find hers. She briefly melts into the kiss, then stops him gently.
What are we doing? Charlie, I leave in a week.
I know.
I should go.
Can I walk you?
No.
Come on, let me walk
you. No, Charlie. Timing. That really is everything. I'm sorry.
Charlie reluctantly backs off, and she heads for the door. He plants his hands on the dining table and bends over, leaning his hips back. He turns, then crosses to the door and opens it. Finding no one there, he hurries back to the table. He grabs a jar containing a burning candle, then ventures out into the darkness.
Tess?
He shuts the door behind him and looks around.
Tess!
Come find me!
Charlie runs off into the moonlit woods, holding the candle aloft. Silhouetted against pale mist, he reaches the cemetery grounds. He weaves past tall stone monuments, searching all around. Pausing, he turns on the spot and catches a glimpse of Tess darting between headstones. He proceeds in her direction.
And why?
She slips out from hiding behind him. Creeping up, she touches his ribs. As he turns, she plants a passionate kiss on his lips. Charlie's free hand rises to her back and pulls her close as they tenderly canoodle. He leans in for another kiss, but Tess pulls back with a smile.
I found you.
She blows out the candle and runs off. She dashes past a tall statue depicting an angel with its wings spread. Giving chase, Charlie tears down a gentle winding slope. He slows to a stop with the angel monument silhouetted behind his shoulder. A few yards ahead, Tess waits for him in a clearing between grave plots. Charlie's chest heaves. Backlit by softly glowing mist, Tess toys with her long hair. Charlie solemnly steps in close to her. She lays her hands on his chest, her nose brushing against his, then slips off his open button-down shirt. Charlie slowly rolls his shoulders back, writhing out of the garment. He lifts his arms as she pulls his t-shirt off over his head. The young lovers stare intimately into each other's eyes. Their lips meet in a heartfelt kiss, and they melt into the embrace.
Voices in your skull are always screaming.
Moving as one, they turn on the spot. As Tess's arms wind around Charlie's bare shoulders, the picture fades to black. Now they lie naked in each other's arms, sharing a tender gaze. Tess trails her fingers along a pair of horseshoe-shaped scars on Charlie's upper chest and gives a gentle smile.
Charlie's. Her marks.
Charlie's expression darkens, and he turns his gaze skyward.
And they're beautiful.
Hardly.
Hey. They saved your life. They're beautiful.
Smiling, she gives him a gentle peck on the lips. Charlie pulls her into a long kiss. Tess lays her head on his shoulder. He wraps his arms around her, and she settles deeper into the embrace. The next morning, Charlie sleeps naked amid the grave monuments. His head rolls toward us, and his eyes blink open groggily.
This doesn't change anything.
He smacks his dry lips. A lone goose stares back at him. Now, in jeans and a t-shirt, Charlie hikes up the waterside path leading to the caretaker's grounds. He breaks into a brief jog, rubbing his eyes. Reaching the cabin, he finds a slip of paper tacked to the door, bearing a doodle of the splendid Splinter. A handwritten note on the back reads, "Come find me." Turning the slip over, Charlie reads the message and smiles. He jogs toward the boat shed, which sits with its barn doors closed. Turning to the bay, he finds Tess manning his old skiff.
I knew you'd find me.
Charlie glances away pensively. Clad in his button-down shirt, Tess smiles at him. Now, Charlie trails his fingers in the water as the splendid Splinter sails across the bay. Bordered by green hills on the horizon, the waves sparkle with bright sunlight.
Here we go!
The craft tips leeward. Charlie and Tess lean back over the windward edge.
Hi,
they counter the force of the wind, steadying the boat. They share a joyful grin.
Oh, hey! Thank you!
For what?
For this!
Stand by to come about!
Aye, aye, Captain!
Charlie makes an adjustment in the lines, and the skiff takes a choppy turn. Now, in the golden glow of a low sun, Tess and Charlie cuddle at the top of the lighthouse.
Trust your heart. The seas catch fire.
I love that the stars walk backward.
How do you know that?
I heard you read it.
Were you at my father's memorial?
Charlie nods. Tess faces the water with a smile.
Oh, my God. E.E. Cummings. It was my dad's favorite.
Yeah. I like it a lot. I don't understand it at all.
about taking chances.
Sailing around the world.
I wish you could come with me.
It's a solo race.
So you could be part of my support team. I could see you for a couple days.
No, I can't.
Why? Come on, you don't have any holidays.
I just can't.
You just can't.
I just can't.
She eyes him quizzically, her smile gradually fading.
Oh, shit.
What?
Nothing. Left me at work.
What? Well, hold on. I'll come with you.
No. Oh, it won't be long. I'll meet you at the cottage.
He leaves Tess alone at the lighthouse. Now, Charlie sprints frantically through the woods, following the winding footpath. He reaches the glade.
Sam! Sam!
He finds his brother trudging away.
Stop! Sam, stop!
He halts at the edge of the woods and turns back.
You're late.
I couldn't help it, Sam.
I knew you'd be late. I could feel you forgetting me.
Oh, Sam.
Without you, I feel myself start to disappear. Be nothing.
There's nothing to be scared of, Sam.
Do you want me to go?
No.
Then why did you bring her?
Turning, Charlie finds Tess behind him.
I didn't mean to spy on you.
He looks back in Sam's direction.
Charlie, it's okay.
He finds his brother gone. Charlie faces Tess.
Sam and I made a deal.
Charlie, you don't have to explain anything to me.
No, we made a pact that every day at sunset I would meet him here.
Charlie.
Tess takes his hand and kisses it.
I can't lose Sam, Tess. Can't lose Sam.
Let's go.
No.
Let's go.
The more I'm in your world, the less I can be in his.
Charlie, at some point, we all have to let go.
I can't lose Sam, Tess.
He shakes his head, then yanks his hand from her grasp. Tess blinks tearfully as she watches him turn away. With a resolute expression, he steps further into the glade.
Bye, Tess. Good luck with the race.
You didn't die in that car crash, Charlie.
He shuts his eyes. As Tess leaves, he opens them again in a haunted stare.
Actually, I did.
We peer back at him from the edge of the woods as he stands motionless, his gaze fixed in our direction. Nighttime. In the caretaker's cabin, Charlie sits alone and bleary-eyed with a glass of whiskey.
I can't come to Cape Town because every evening I play catch with my dead brother in the graveyard. But I'll be here when you get back to us. Because, of course, I never leave.
Charlie morosely sips his liquor. The next morning, boats languidly sail past the coastal town. In a house overlooking a bay, a golden retriever gnaws on a chew toy in the living room. Tess pulls on a denim jacket as she enters the room and eyes the dog.
You.
She grabs a leash from a hook by the door.
Come on, let's go for a walk.
He runs out a doggy door.
Bobo, come here. Hey.
Meanwhile, Charlie lies asleep on his couch. He licks his lips, then groggily lifts his head.
Hello? Charlie? Oh, I never can tell if your machine is hooked up.
He rises.
It's your mom. I just really miss you. Give me a call sometime, okay? I love you.
He sets a coffee pot in the kitchen sink.
Bye.
As water fills the carafe, he opens a freezer and takes out a rumpled bag of grounds. He scowls at it, then gives it a shake. He crumples it, tosses it over his shoulder, and shuts off the tap. Now at a diner counter, Charlie sips coffee. Alistair joins him.
Hi, postman.
In a pea-green sweater, he browses a newspaper.
You look dirty, mate. What happened to you?
Please say you got laid at least. Don't know, is it? Oh, well. Thanks, babe.
Two officers step to a prominent spot in the diner.
Can I have your attention?
Outside with Tess.
Bobo! Julie, can you grab Bobo?
Julie lets the dog run by.
Julie?
Tess's smile fades as her friend walks past her with no acknowledgement. Tess faces a shop window. Back in the diner.
We've got a boat missing out of Quincy Harbor.
Whose boat?
It's the Carancia. Tess Carroll's boat.
Tess frowns at the window.
She was out sailing during the storm 3 days ago. There's been no contact since.
Charlie pictures the Carancia at sea and the brewing squall. A view from his cottage shows Tess vanish as she walks away.
Fine, I just hit some rough weather last night.
Yeah, it really is.
I got tossed around pretty good on my last day.
Outside, the shop window reflects the street and passersby, but shows no sign of Tess.
Coast Guard's overextended, so we're asking for volunteers to join.
Charlie swiftly leaves the diner. Now, he drives the Gator back to the caretaker's grounds and checks the boat shed. The splendid splinter remains stored inside.
It's too late.
Charlie stares at the neglected boat. Now in the cemetery, tombstones stand in light and shadow. A distant sprinkler waters the grass. Charlie glowers as he strides among the graves. Farther along, our view peers over the headstone in memory of Tess's father. Charlie steps into view and crouches down on one knee. The engraved side remains hidden to us, but visible to him.
Tess.
Why are you the only one who can see me, Charlie?
I can see you because I can see Sam.
Tess leans huddled against her father's headstone. Charlie's tearful gaze stays on her as she returns a grief-stricken look. Her head wound bleeds.
Sam's dead.
My boat never came back, Tess. You never came back.
No, I...
In between now.
No, I lied to Tink. I lied to him. I sailed straight into the storm. I remember I saw the old Cape Flattery light.
Everyone sees the light. I've seen that light, Tess.
Charlie, I'm gonna call. I'm scared.
Charlie's eyes pool with tears.
I wanted you to find me. That's why I came here, because I wanted you to find me. You were supposed to find me, because you were supposed to help me. You were supposed to find me, because you were supposed
please,
to
not please get find me.
Yes.
His jaw falls slack. He sheds a heavy tear, then blinks his stunned red eyes. He's alone in the hedgeline plot. Charlie bows his head restlessly, then looks up, his face locked in a stiff grimace. In the cottage, he throws papers and books off his desk and shelves, tears boat schematics off a bulletin board, and rips the whole board off the wall. He flings it across the room and kicks a box. He punches the sunset charts on the wall by the door and pounds them down onto a table. Charlie doubles over the charts, agonizing. He grips the table and presses his forehead to the fallen charts. He straightens a little, his eyes on the charts. Clad in a deep blue shirt, his strong back flexes as he catches his breath. Charlie opens a bureau drawer. Reaching inside, he strokes his baseball mitt, then firmly lays it flat. He leans over the open drawer, his eyes unwaveringly on its contents. Our view of Charlie, seen from the shoulders up, straightens with him, and he leaves the cottage. Now, Charlie sits in the woods, his gaze distant.
She's dead, that girl. Tess.
Sam looks on. His red mitt dangles on his hand at his side.
She took a boat out in that storm. She never came back.
Sam takes a few steps closer and lets his mitt drop to the ground. He takes a seat by his big brother.
You still got me.
Sam peers sidelong at his brother, who stares off. Sam rests a hand on Charlie's leg.
Yeah, I know.
Charlie sits frozen in a troubled daze. Cut to black. Now, at night, his cottage door opens and he turns on the lights. Later, in the ransacked room, he positions a milk crate on the messy floor and drops some papers into it in a feeble start to cleaning up. Outside, a woman in a dark knee-length dress treads toward the cottage door.
Mr. St. Clair.
I'm not on duty.
This is a personal matter. I'm Carla Ferente. Florio was my husband. I tried calling earlier. He died last night. Florio wanted you to have his medallion.
The fair-skinned brunette woman reaches out, offering the necklace.
Are you sure?
I'm sure. He said it was the answer for you.
Charlie reaches out and accepts.
To what?
Why you?
That's it?
That's it.
As the widow turns away, Charlie fingers the medallion.
I've never seen one of these without a cross.
Oh, it's not Christ. It's St. Jude. Jude is a saint of all lost causes.
There's no such thing as a lost cause.
Yeah, well, what my Florio used to always say.
Mrs. Ferenti smiles sadly as she leaves. Alone, Charlie regards the silver quatrefoil pendant. His gaze focuses beyond the medallion to the floor, where Tess's note in red ink shows among the cluttered papers. The doodle of the sailboat lies face up. Charlie fetches the note. He meditatively takes a seat and turns the scrap over, reading the three-word message in Tess's cute handwriting, "Come find me."
God just doesn't show off. There's gotta be a reason. God gave you a second chance.
You're not dead.
Now at Maddie's.
I just really hate geese, mate. I just hate them.
Charlie arrives.
Crap everywhere.
Where's Tink?
Later at a harbor fueling station.
Fueled up? Let's go.
Tink grabs him.
Hey, get your hands off my boat! In case you haven't heard, the Coast Guard called off the search.
Well, then give me your keys. I'm taking your boat.
Oh, the hell you are.
I know where she is, Tink.
Oh, dude.
I know where she is.
That's a quack job. Get your cop car.
Tank, man.
I know where Tess is, Tink.
She's running out of time.
Charlie, go. Go back in, Charlie.
She's running out of time.
Tink, we're going, all right?
Alistair backs Charlie away.
What are you doing?
Alistair watches Tink enter the convenience-type store to finish his transaction. Then he faces Charlie.
The key's in the ignition, right?
Go.
As Charlie hops aboard the motorized fishing boat and ducks into the wheelhouse, Alistair unmoors the craft. Tink sees Alistair pushing them off. Tink comes running.
I don't think he's gonna make it.
Tink leaps off the dock and lands on board.
Oh, I made it. Stay down.
Alistair holds Tink down.
Where are you two taking my boat?
Hey, Flattery.
That's 20 miles from Tess's last known position.
But it's exactly where she would have been if she sailed straight into the storm, Tink. She's about to sail around the world. She would have wanted to test her boat in heavy weather.
You didn't even know her, St. Cloud. How could you possibly know what she would have done?
Because it's what I would have done, Tink. It's what any sailor would do.
I'm good.
You all right?
Good.
I'm gonna let you up, all right? Relax.
All right, Charlie. Say you're right. I think she wanted to test the boat, okay? It doesn't matter, because we both know that no one can survive for 3 days in these cold waters.
Just listen to me, Tink. She's alive. She's alive.
Tink creases his lips in an anxious smirk.
She's alive, Tink.
At dawn, rough seas pound the steep, rocky cliffs making up Cape Flattery. A jagged notch affords a view of misty outcroppings, and a lighthouse shines its rotating beacon. Tink's boat cruises closer. Standing watch at the bow, Charlie knocks on the wheelhouse window.
Flattery light!
Now, in the full morning sun, the surf slams a hump-shaped boulder. Farther along the coast, massive eroded columns of rock jut skyward, some triangular, others more like blocks. Tink's boat crests a swell toward a horizon featuring a half dozen rocky humps. Tawny sea lions sunbathe upon one as the boat passes, and a pod of dolphins swims nearby. Now on board, Charlie mans the helm. Tink gets groggily to his feet.
Good day. We covered everything up to Spike Rock. Let me grab the wheel. Come on, I got it. It's my boat. I know what to do. Come on. Come on. Get some rest.
Charlie reluctantly stands. Outside, Alistair lies on the bench lid of a supply trunk with his eyes closed. Charlie tosses some rope out of a striped folding chair beside him and takes a seat. He stares at his friend, drops his gaze to his wristwatch, then looks up. White, puffy clouds fill the sky, leaving only patches of powder blue. Charlie checks his watch again. The time reads 12:07. He wearily closes his eyes and rubs his lids.
We start now. We could make it back to Quincy by sunset.
Charlie glances at his friend, then blinks thoughtfully and lets his troubled gaze drift.
What is it you do in the woods every night, man?
Alistair keeps his eyes shut and arms crossed over his chest.
If I told you, you wouldn't believe me.
I would believe you. You're my mate.
Charlie stares off tearfully, his hair gently ruffled by the wind. He holds up the St. Jude medallion and gazes at its polished silver surface. It glints in the brilliant sunlight.
You know, she might not even be out there.
So, Charlie, are we going back? Or are we moving on?
Charlie stares at the necklace with a knit brow, then squeezes it in his fist and turns his resolute glare toward the water.
I'm gonna find Tess.
He stands and climbs up onto the side of the boat. Later, the vessel barrels onward, leaving a wide wake. The setting sun colors the sky a fiery orange, its brilliance reflected in a long streak on the rippling water. In Quincy, the dock lights turn on and the sunset cannon fires. In the cemetery, shadows stretch over the grass. An old headstone shaped like a Celtic cross towers over the other grave markers. Five geese wander past. In the glade, golden beams of light shine on Sam, who repeatedly smacks the baseball into his mitt. On the sea, Charlie stares off emotionally. The boat speeds toward distant islands. Back in the glade, Sam sits waiting.
Charlie?
The boy stares expectantly at the other end of the clearing, then shakes his hair out of his eyes and gives a slight wince.
Charlie?
His lips pout into a frown. On the boat, golden light bathes Charlie's solemn face. In the glade, Sam drops his gaze. He puts his baseball cap on, then wipes his nose on the back of his hand. Gazing skyward, he adjusts the hat lower on his forehead. Meanwhile, tears well up and glisten in Charlie's clear blue eyes.
Forgive me, Sam.
Several teardrops plummet down his cheeks. In the glade, Sam sadly bows his head. Mustering a brave expression, he punches a fist into his mitt. He glances at the sky, then hikes off into the forest and looks back over his shoulder at the waning golden light filling the glade.
I love you, Charlie.
The sun flares between the towering trees. A misty haze highlights its warm beams as they shine through the forest. Sam makes his way up a slope and curiously surveys his surroundings. A smile breaks across his boyish face. He remembers winning the race. He recalls himself beaming on his way to his brother's graduation. On the docks, Charlie hugs him. At their first baseball practice, the big brother playfully swats his cheek. Back in the forest, the setting sun brightens and Sam's grinning form vanishes. Back at sea, gray clouds darken the orange-tinted sky. Charlie looks up and finds a shooting star arcing across it. His lips part. As the sun sinks below the horizon, the shooting star falls toward a distant rocky island. It flashes, then disappears.
Sam?
Charlie blinks thoughtfully, then whirls toward the cabin and bangs on the windshield in front of Tank.
Over there! Out of rocks! That way!
The boat churns up water as it speeds toward the island. Later, after dark, a searchlight shines from its deck. It sweeps over a rocky shore.
Should be coming up on it!
They're on the starboard side.
That first one's going past us now.
As the boat draws closer, the searchlight focuses on red and blue debris. It's the Carencia.
There it is!
God damn it, Tess!
It's
at 10 o'clock, about 10 meters off.
I can see the back.
Bring it back.
Damn right, mate. Damn right.
I got it.
Get as close as you can.
He strips and puts on a diving backpack.
Charlie, what are you doing? Charlie, the water's like ice. Don't be an idiot, mate. Please wait for the Coast Guard.
We wait, it'll be too late.
You won't last long enough to save her, mate. Please.
This is why I was given the second chance.
No, we're Charlie.
He dives into the water and turns on a flashlight. Meanwhile, Tink radios in.
We need immediate medical assistance for one.
Two, he just dove in.
Make it two people.
Underwater, Charlie yanks at the door to the sloop cockpit. It swings open and he sweeps the beam of his flashlight around the interior. He swims in, then surfaces in a pocket of air. His flashlight moves under the rippling water, briefly lighting his face. He dives back under. In the murky shadows, he glimpses a bulkhead, then a coil of floating rope. He surfaces again.
Tess!
His flashlight focuses on a flotation vest.
Tess!
Charlie scrambles over and lifts its hood.
Tess!
Finding it empty, he angrily shoves it aside. He scans his flashlight around the flooded cabin, then lowers it and dives back under. Beneath the surface, the light finds an open porthole. Charlie swims down and worms his way through. Outside the boat, rubbery raft-like debris ripples on the seafloor. Charlie starts to swim off, then jerks to a halt. Finding a cord hooked onto his diving backpack, he strains to pull free, but remains tethered to the spot. He tugs harder, panicking, then fumbles with the locked straps of the vest. His flashlight plummets to the bottom of the sea. As he struggles to work his right arm free, a stream of bubbles escapes his gasping mouth. Finally, he unbuckles the backpack and swims up to the surface. A wave bashes his head against a rock and he falls back under. As he resurfaces, the roiling water beats at him. Meager light glistens on his body as he crawls up a rock out of the sea. Standing, he remembers holding Sam's hand after the car accident. He stumbles onward, gripping a piece of driftwood for support. Leaning heavily on the log, he makes his way into shallow water. On the beach of a nearby cove, he notices some yellow debris. Hugging the rocks, he wades toward it, then pulls himself back out of the water. Further up the shore, in a crevice between the rocks, he spots a figure lying motionless in a drenched red jacket and waders. Charlie's teeth chatter as he treads forward. Dropping to his hands and knees, he weakly crawls up to the figure and sees that it's Tess. Charlie hovers over her for a moment, then lies down beside her and feels her neck pulse. He yanks her jacket open. He parts the bib of her waders, then unzips her blue shirt beneath it. He tucks the shirt beneath her, exposing her bare stomach and black sports bra. Working one arm inside her jacket, he pulls her limp body toward his and cradles her head in the crook of his other arm. As he holds her tightly, the picture fades to black. Brief fade-ins show Charlie panting as he continues to embrace Tess. He presses his lips to her forehead, breathing heavily against her. Now, the two sleep peacefully side by side. Charlie gives a faint shiver. A breeze ruffles Tess's hair and jacket, and a brilliant light shines down on them. Charlie wakes up to find a helicopter overhead. In the beam of the searchlight, a rescuer descends on a cable. Later, Charlie sleeps on board the chopper, his temple stained with blood. Tipping his head back, he groggily awakens. He notices Tess lying unconscious, her arm dangling off the side of a gurney. With his brow knitted, he unbuckles his seatbelt.
Sit tight. Sit
Flinging it off, he leans forward and seizes Tess's hand in his own. He gazes at her anxiously. Her hand remains limp inside his. He tearfully knits his brow. Tess's fingers curl upward and grip his hand. Charlie's chin quavers, and he heaves a relieved sigh. Later in a hospital, his eyelids flutter open. Three butterfly bandages cover a laceration on his temple. He blinks, then gives a faint wince and furrows his brow. He swallows repeatedly, grabs a cup from a nearby table, and downs its contents. He spits them out, waking Alistair in a bedside chair.
Never steal another man's gin. Yeah, right.
He pours some water from a pitcher and hands it over.
Welcome back, how you doing?
How is she?
Yeah, she's good, mate. Yeah, she's good. She's recovering. Doctor said she had hypothermia. And, when you hugged her, your body won't have kept her alive. Look, well done, mate. Proper hero.
Alistair nods and offers his friend a smile. Grinning to himself, Charlie settles back on his pillows. Now, on the bay, we follow awake to a sailboat being piloted by Charlie. Holding the wheel steady with one hand, he leans sideways to peer around the cabin. He unloops a rope and adjusts a sail. The boat speeds onward. Summoning a breath, Charlie surveys his surroundings, then allows a grin as he glides through the bay. Now, a two-story home surrounded by greenery stands on a low rise overlooking the water. On the porch, Tess sits solemnly in a wicker chair with Bobo lying on the ground beside her. Gazing out at the bay, she stands and steps forward. Charlie's boat sails toward her. Tess watches it with an intense stare. Later, she treads down a long dock jutting into the water. Charlie grins at her from atop the cabin of his boat.
I heard you were back home!
She smiles and bashfully bites her lower lip. Now, she helps him tie his boat to the dock.
Isn't this Bevelman's old boat?
Mine now. They were going to strip it for scrap, so I took it off their hands.
Always loved this boat.
Well, I'm going to fix her up. Make some modifications.
I have some flukes.
Yeah, some flukes.
You know, that's the last conversation I had before I woke up in the hospital bed.
Really?
Yeah. Well, unless you include Tink's radio chatter, which I don't.
You have a good memory.
No, there's one thing I'll never forget. That's that you saved my life, Charlie St. Cloud.
He averts his gaze. Tess pats the boat's deck.
She's a blue water cruiser. Where are you headed?
Everywhere. As soon as she's sound, I'm going to sail her around the world.
Good luck.
You want to go for a spin?
Not today.
Come on, Des. You're gonna have to get back on the water eventually.
I will. It's not the water that I'm afraid of, Charlie. It's you.
Me.
The way you make me feel, I don't know, I've been having these visions, or maybe dreams, but they're more vivid than any dreams that I've ever had, and you're in them, and we're in them, and... Never mind.
They're not dreams, Tess. They're memories.
He stares after her as she walks away.
Trust your heart if the seas catch fire. Live by love till the stars walk backward.
With a shocked look, Tess stops and turns back to him. She shakes her head, her lips parted.
How did you know that?
Charlie strolls over, his eyes fixed on her perplexed face.
It's E.E. Cummings. It was your dad's favorite. It's about taking chances.
She blinks at him as he holds her gaze. Glancing down, she bites her lower lip, then tightens her mouth into a thoughtful line. A faint smile appears. Charlie jerks his head.
Just take a chance, Tess.
Grinning, he holds out his hand. Sunlight shines on his upturned palm as Tess places her hand in his. His thumb strokes the skin above her knuckles.
My legs are so wobbly.
He swoops her into his arms and carries her onto the boat. Now, light shines through the windows into the empty caretaker's cabin. Crouched against a wall, Charlie closes the lid on a lone box. He glances at his watch, then turns to a window. Standing, he steps into the sunlight, which vividly catches his bright red t-shirt. Squinting in the light, he clenches his jaw. Later, Charlie strolls into the glade. His arms hang loosely at his sides as he scans his eyes over the clearing. He stares sadly at the place where Sam used to wait for him.
I miss you.
I'm okay, Charlie.
Sam appears behind him.
I'd give anything for you to see me. What I'd have become. But no one ever gets to see what could have been.
Charlie turns slightly, still unable to see his brother.
Sorry I had to break our deal.
It was time. I mean, it's beyond anything we ever imagined, Charlie.
I hurt as bad as the day he died.
You hurt because you're alive.
Charlie stares into the trees, his brow creased, and the corners of his mouth turned down slightly. He squats, resting his arms on his bent legs. Sam squats a few yards back with his eyes on his older brother's anguished face.
We'll always be brothers.
Promise? Every day? Come rain or shine, come hell or high water?
Charlie rises. He shifts his eyes over Sam's spot during their games of catch, then turns away and starts to trudge out of the glade. He abruptly turns back to the empty clearing.
I promise.
He sweeps his gaze over the area one last time, then jogs into the woods. Rays of golden sunlight seep through the trees as Charlie walks in slow motion, idly tossing up his baseball. At the head of the trail where the woods meet the cemetery, Tess stands waiting for Charlie. He joins her and takes her hand. She wraps her other hand around his arm as they stroll out of the woods together. Our view rises over the cemetery. Beams of warm sunlight gleam through the trees above the couple. Fade to black. Now credits appear, directed by Burr Steers. A scene shows a group standing on the dock beside Charlie's fixed-up sailboat. Screenplay by Craig Pierce and Lewis Collett. Based on the novel The Death and Life of Charlie St. Cloud by Ben Sherwood. Alistair kisses Tess on both cheeks, then hugs Charlie and kisses his cheeks. Produced by Mark Platt. Executive producers Michael Fittrell, Ryan Cavanaugh, Ben Sherwood. Executive producers Jared LaBoff, Adam Siegel. As Charlie's sailboat pulls away from the dock, his friends watch from the pier above. Director of photography Enrique Chediak. Production designer Ida Random. Editor Padraic McKinley. Charlie stands at the helm of the boat while Tess works the rigging by the bow. Zac Efron. Amanda Crew. Tess's hair blows in the wind as she turns and gives Charlie an adoring look. She heads over to him. Donal Logue, Charlie Tahan. Charlie smiles as Tess appears at his side. Grinning, she clasps his face and they kiss. Augustus Prue, with Ray Liotta and Kim Basinger. Music composed and conducted by Rolf Kent. Costume designer Denise Wingate. Our view pulls back from the boat to show its white sails billowing and an American flag flapping at its stern. Casting by Allison Jones, Corrine Mayer, CSA, Heike Brandstatter, CSA, a Mark Platt production, a Burr Steers film. As the boat heads into the open sea, we cut to black. More credits roll. Cast: Zac Efron as Charlie St. Cloud, Charlie Tahan as Sam St. Cloud, Amanda Crew as Tess Carroll, Augustus Prue as Alistair Woolley, Donal Logue as Tink Weatherby, Kim Basinger as Claire St. Cloud, Ray Liotta as Florio Ferenti, Dave Franco as Sully, Matt Ward as Connors, Miles Chalmers as Latham, Jesse Wheeler as Green, Desiree Zulowski as Carla Ferenti, Adrian Huff as Ben Carroll, Jill Teed as Grace Carroll, Valerie Tian, Grace Sherman, Brenna O'Brien as Girls in Toy Store, Tegan Moss as Cindy, Julia Maxwell as Rachel, Paul Chevreau as Hottie Snow, Paul Duchart as Reverend Polk, Renu Bakshi as Reporter, Darren Dolinsky as Ambulance Driver, Sophie Stikas as Mary Rogers, Marcy T. House as Photographer, Ted Whittle as Principal, Natasha Dennis as Julie, D. Neil Mark as EMT, Stunt Coordinator Marnie Eng, Charlie Stunt Double Eli Zagadakis, Charlie Sailing Double Hamish Miller, Sam Sailing Double Richard Minielli, Sailing Doubles Sterling Bancroft, Rob Dale, Nicola Gerke, Michael Leach, Vicky Rhodes, Jake Cullen, Carolyn Field, Trevor Jones, Andrew McCorkadale, John Scott, Georgia Stevens, Sailors Charles Dobell, Hunter Loudon, Jeffrey Lane, Sailar Moyer, Stunts Guy Bues, Doug Chapman, Dwayne Dickinson, David Jacox, Gerald Pates, Elaine Chanwan, Brent Connolly, Austin Dunn, Scott Nicholson, Matt Phillips, Brent Woolsey. Unit Production Managers B. Casey Grant, Michael Fottrell. First Assistant Director Lisa C. Satriano. Second Assistant Director Shay Rowan. Art Directors Kelvin Humaney, Jeff Wallace. Assistant Art Director Tyler Bishop Heron. Set Decorators Timothy F. Joyce, Mark Soparlo. Assistant Set Decorator Lee Campbell. Set Decoration Coordinator Cindy Rose. Set Decoration Buyer Michelle Pitney. Property Master Dean Eilertson. Assistant Property Master Jordan Dobby. Property Buyer Michelle Hendrickson. Set Dressers Katrina Brand, Kevin Cockle, Ken Diamond, Jacques LaRue, Mike Marston, Jim McGill, Steve Miller, Ann Rowley. Soundtrack available on Backlot Music and Verrey's Saraband Records. The Major League Baseball trademarks depicted in this motion picture were licensed by Major League Baseball Properties Incorporated. World Map, courtesy of National Geographic Society. Nautical Books, courtesy of Evergreen Pacific Publishing. Major League Baseball footage used with permission of Major League Baseball Properties Incorporated. Stock photography, courtesy of photosearch.jupiterimages.com. In association with Dentsu Incorporated. With the participation of the Province of British Columbia. Special thanks to Town of Gibsons, District of North Vancouver, City of Richmond, BC Film Commission, Eagle Harbor Yacht Club. American Humane monitored the animal action. No animals were harmed. This motion picture used sustainability strategies to reduce its carbon emissions and environmental impact. For Jonah and Jacob. Copyright 2010 Universal Studios, all rights reserved. Animated Universal Studios logo, copyright 1997 Universal Studios. Country of first publication, United States of America. Universal Studios is the author of this motion picture for purposes of the Berne Convention and all national laws giving effect thereto. The characters and events depicted in this photoplay are fictitious. Any similarity to actual persons living or dead is purely coincidental. This motion picture is protected under the laws of the United States and other countries. Unauthorized duplication, distribution, or exhibition may result in civil liability and criminal prosecution. This film has been described by the Media Access Group at WGBH with funding from Universal Pictures. This motion picture has been rated PG-13, parents strongly cautioned, by the Classification and Rating Administration. Some material may be inappropriate for children under 13.